Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. In 1983, Montana chose the grizzly bear to be its state mammal. That's not surprising. The bear is mythic in its size, strength, and intelligence, and has a storied history with America's first people and later immigrants. Although the bear is primarily an omnivore, conflicts with the livestock industry are legendary. Grizzlies have been hunted by humans for centuries, by first peoples to obtain mythic power, by agricultural people to protect herds. Market hunters exterminated the grizzly in California for its fur and meat. Today, the great bears are hunted in Canada and Alaska for a trophy head or impressive rug. What does the future hold for the great bear in Montana? Dan Vermillion has something to say about that. He's chairman of the State Fish and Wildlife Commission. Dan, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Tell us a little about your background. What did your folks do? Where'd you grow up?
You know, I grew up in Billings. My dad was a physician in town. My mom was a Spanish teacher. And we grew up in Billings hunting and fishing as much as we could. We were three brothers. We now run a fishing business in Livingston, Montana called Sweetwater Travel. But as kids, you know, we grew up in Billings. And every single summer we'd go to Yellowstone Park. And, you know, we'd spend a lot of time. We'd do a backpacking trip up in Beartooth. And then we'd finish by going through Yellowstone, fishing Lamar, Slough Creek, in that area. You know, this was 1972, 3, 4, somewhere in there. And at that time, you know, we had this vision, and everybody thought, you go to Yellowstone Park, you're going to see grizzly bears. And between the time I went there in 1972 and until quite recently, probably in the mid-90s, I never saw a grizzly bear in Yellowstone Park.
Wow, and in the backcountry, too, not just driving down the road.
No, we did canoe trips into Yellowstone Lake, hiking way up the Lamar, up Slough Creek. And as little kids, you always remember the Night of the Grizzly story from Glacier Park. And that sort of formed our first impression of grizzly bears. I never became comfortable with grizzly bears as a species and being around them, fishing and hunting and doing the things I do, until I spent a lot of time in Alaska in the 80s, where their populations are much more robust, and they seemingly have figured out a way to live with people pretty easily.
Where'd you go to school? What'd you study?
I went to American University in Washington, D.C., because I wanted to, when I was in high school, I was an exchange student in Bolivia, and I kind of came back from that experience thinking that I wanted to be a diplomat. As soon as I got out of American University, I thought instead of getting a job, I should go back to fish guiding and continued my work as a fishing guide.
Now, Sweetwater Travel is an international fishing business.
Yep. You know, we have lodges. It's interesting. We're a Montana company, but we started our business in Mongolia. So we have fishing operations in Mongolia, the Bahamas, Brazil, Canada, Alaska, and at one time, French Polynesia.
I think it was you, but I'm not sure, that told me that Mongolia is like Montana before it was developed.
It is like Montana before it's developed. And you can, you know, you can spend a lot of time over there and never see a fence, but you'll see all the livestock that you'd want to see. You see grizzly bears, you'll see elk, you'll see huge trout, and really friendly people just like Montana.
And how long have you been doing business there?
20 years.
How's it been?
It's been really solid. It's interesting that if you look at the fishing operations in Mongolia, most of the two most prominent operations are run by kids that grew up in Billings.
And you're fishing, you said trout. Is it taimon?
Is that what it's the world's largest trout. It's called a taimon. And they are called the river wolf, and they get up to, you know, where we are, about 56 inches.
That's a big trout.
It is a big trout.
Do they take a dry fly?
And they do. They like to eat mice and rats.
All right. How did you get on the Fish and Game Commission, and why did you seek the appointment?
You know, I sought the appointment in 2006, fall of 2006, because there was an opening in Region 3, you know, South Central Montana. And fish and wildlife policy is something that I've always been interested in. I went to law school in Missoula, and, you know, I went to law school to be what I thought was an environmental lawyer until I learned what environmental law actually was. But the policy of fish and wildlife and conservation is something that I believe deeply in and I'm really interested in. So I applied, and Brian Schweitzer was governor then. It's just an opportunity that I thought would be a really interesting one, that I thought I had something to contribute, and I was selected by Brian in January of 2007.
How long is the term?
Terms are 4 years apiece. I am now on my third term. My second confirmation was, I think I got voted down four times. John Brendan led the charge against me. And finally, on the last day and the second to last vote before the motion to adjourn, they did a motion to reconsider, and I passed by two votes.
Now, that means Senate confirmation of the
Correct.
Appointment.
Yep.
The governor gets to appoint subject to Senate approval.
Yep. And so I got voted down, and several times, and I'll never forget, I talked to the senator from Livingston. I said, well, and he finally voted for me, and that was one of the few votes that got me over the hump. And I said to him, like, well, thank you very much. I look forward to working with you. He goes, shouldn't thank me. I voted against you four times. So,
who was that?
Senator Arthin.
And the last time was easier?
Somewhat, although John Brennan left he led a last-minute charge against me based on a seeming antipathy that I appear to have towards walleye being in the Missouri and the Yellowstone.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We are talking with Chairman of the Montana Fish and Wildlife Commission, Dan Vermillion of Livingston. Help my recollection, in California I served on the commission, and the commission was given the authority to establish policy for the Department of Fish and Game, even though the director of the department was appointed by the governor. The commission had authority in staggered terms as we have here. Is it the same situation here?
Yep, it sounds identical, actually.
And the idea was, in California, to give fish and wildlife policy some independence from politics. If the director answers to you for policies, that's different than answering to a single elected person.
Yeah, that's correct. I think that's the foundation of the commission structure for fish and wildlife management in the United States, and that is that the commission seemingly can be independent of politics, that, you know, fish and wildlife management should be based on science, and it should be not a partisan issue because science should not be a partisan issue. It should be objective, and that the results should be evident to anybody that's willing to look at them from a scientific perspective when they're making their decisions.
How do you feel it's worked, pluses and minuses? You've been there long enough to have a very informed opinion.
I think the commission structure is a really effective structure for, I mean, if there's one thing that Montanans are passionate about, it's their fish and wildlife and it's their public lands. And I think the commission is a regular check-in with the public on the different issues and the different management decisions that a department makes about how we manage our fisheries, how we manage our wildlife resources. And by doing that, it allows us to have regular conversations, monthly conversations with the public where we have issues that are coming up. All of our votes are generally structured as tentative decisions. Then they go out for public comment. And then after we get the public comment, we make a final decision.
Are public comments taken seriously as a routine, or does it depend on the public comments?
The public comments are effective. Sometimes the challenge is with public comments is if you don't make the decision a particular commenter suggests you make, they feel like you haven't taken their public comment into account. Mm-hmm. And trying to give credibility to that process and that conversation with the public is a real challenge. And there's definitely frustration within the public when they feel like we make a decision that they don't support, that they feel like they weren't listened to, or that their input didn't have any impact on how we reached our decision. But as a commissioner, I can say that over time, public comment's super important. We listen to it. If you go to the Fish and Wildlife Parks website, our phone numbers are there, and I get phone calls every day. And, you know, the written comments that come in kind of a boilerplate form, you might read the first 10 or 12, but after a while,
sure,
when the first two sentences are identical, I have to admit they get less and less credible as time moves on.
Okay, now a lot of times people write, and they're not science-based comments, they're personally felt, honest opinions. The same might be said of the governor. I don't mean the current governor, I just mean any governor. I assume that the commission takes seriously what a governor says if it's a controversial issue. I can think of bison, grizzlies, wolves, maybe some other issues. What's the real world like there, given the origin and intention of the structure of some independence?
I've served under two governors, one of whom was much more interactive with the commission. He would be more engaged with what the commission was doing and might make his opinion on how the commission should decide a particular issue more clear.
You're a tactful man.
Yeah, the present governor is much more deferential, I would say. He has faith in the people he's appointed to be on the commission. And, you know, I will make a regular effort to check in with his staff on a particular issue and let them know how we're feeling, what we're hearing, and if they have any input. But they have a lot of faith in the people they've appointed and that the Senate has confirmed, and generally are supportive of what we decide to do. No, but what I would say is that, you know, I would tell you that almost since the beginning, the commission has felt you get appointed because you typically have a relationship with whoever it is that is the governor. But once you're in that office and you really do tend to shift your conversation piece more to the public and less with the chief executive of the state.
Very interesting. I take it from the fact that you're in your third term that you found it personally satisfying.
Yeah, I really have. It's something that, you know, I grew up in Montana and I've made my life hunting and fishing. And it's something that I feel really strongly about, and I think that I have a lot to contribute. And it's fascinating, the issues I care most about.
Let's talk about the grizzly now. That's an issue that's been before your commission recently. I think, you correct me if I'm wrong, the bear was listed under the Endangered Species Act for about 41 years. It came off 2006-07, that was challenged. The listing was reinstated. I think it had to do with white bark pine that they eat. The
pine nuts.
And now it's off again, correct? Maybe you could summarize where you are.
Well, so where we are right now is that basically there's two populations of grizzly bears in Montana. One's the greater Yellowstone population. The other one's the northern continental divide ecosystem population. The population that's been presently proposed for delisting by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is the one in the greater Yellowstone area. And so where we are right now is the state has proposed a management structure as part of the delisting process. So as the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service goes through its delisting process, it knows and has good parameters of how the state's going to manage these bears once we regain management authority over the bears.
Now, there's some sort of cooperative agreement with two other states, correct?
That's correct. We have an agreement, and part of that is because of the nature of the greater Yellowstone ecosystem. So you have Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana.
All there.
Mm-hmm. And so what we've had to do between the three states, and we face the same challenges with the wolves, was how do we go about allocating management authority and managing the mortality that's allowable to keep the bears from being relisted. So the memorandum of agreement between the three states is about how we go about allocating that allowable mortality within the ecosystem on an annual basis to keep the entire population that lives in Yellowstone Park, or you could say Yellowstone Park is its foundation, and then it spreads outward. And so it's how do we go about managing those bears as they come out of Yellowstone to keep them off the list overall.
I'm a little surprised at one thing. My impression was there were more bears in the northern ecosystem in the northern part than in the Yellowstone. Isn't that correct?
That is correct, as I understand it as well. But the Yellowstone population is a population that, when it was listed in 1975, that population was down to close to 200 bears.
Really?
And now, and as I mentioned earlier in the conversation, when I was a kid growing up and you'd go into Yellowstone Park, you knew there were bears out there, but you never saw them. In Yellowstone today, you go down to the park and people are genuinely seeing bears. So those bears are definitely pushing the boundaries. The bear population has grown. And as the population has grown, it's given the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service the confidence necessary to say that that population itself has recovered, it's self-sustaining, and it no longer needs the protections of the Endangered Species Act.
Let me read what I took off the department's website. We envision a grizzly bear management program throughout western Montana that are similar to other resident species and which maintain effective biological connection between the two core areas and linkage of these areas with wild populations to the north in Canada and a potential habitat in the Bitterroot. It is our vision that one day the population of western Montana will also interact with the existing population of greater Yellowstone area. Now, I understand the geography, but what does this mean, grizzly bear management programs? What's that phrase mean? And does it include hunting?
It does. The way Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has managed wildlife over time is through hunting. And, hunting fills that is part of the management structure of a particular species. When we look at grizzly bears in Montana, there's two basic indicators. What is the biological habitat? What is the carrying capacity biologically of the habitat available for bears? And then where those bears could actually live, because there's obviously many places in Montana where bears could live, but there aren't as many places in Montana where bears can be socially acceptable and socially tolerated. And so when you look at Yellowstone, you have a very core area where there's a high degree of social tolerance and biological capacity to have bears there. But as you start to get out of those outer edges away from Yellowstone or away from Glacier or the Rocky Mountain front, you start to see conflicts where folks who haven't had bears for a very long time on their ranches or on their farms are suddenly seeing grizzly bears, a sow with two cubs or young males, moving out into the prairie or out into places like Red Lodge or Columbus or what have you, that they haven't had bears in 50, 60, 70 years, and suddenly bears are starting to show up.
So you're saying that's fact. That's fact. That's not
that's fact. That's happening now. So the grizzly bear management programs are going about and managing that social tolerance, hopefully expanding that social tolerance while maintaining that biological base in Yellowstone and the GYE as a solid core of bear population for the state of Montana.
In reading in preparation for the show, I did some background check on British Columbia, which has about 16,000 grizzlies, they figure. And it was very interesting. They have greatly reduced bear mortality by a Bear Aware program, and the department I know has a Bear Aware program. But I was quite impressed. In a 10-year period, 16 grizzlies were destroyed before they started the program, and a further 107 relocated away from a particular town, Revelstoke. An education program by the Revelstoke Bear Aware program was put in place in 96, and in the 20 years since the program began, just 4 bears have been destroyed and 5 have been relocated. That's rather dramatic success. So what's the department, why would you consider hunting to handle this problem of bears moving out before you focus on bear awareness?
Certainly the department is really focused on creating bear awareness and trying to minimize human conflicts, mm-hmm. because ultimately when you have human conflicts with bears, at least in Montana and the United States, the bears don't typically come out too well. We either move them or they have to be euthanized because they're no longer capable of living in union or harmony with the human community that lives on the outskirts of the park. So the reason we do hunting, at least the way I see hunting as a commissioner and as a Montanan, is hunting is something that creates a tolerance, creates an acceptance, creates a loyalty to a particular, an affinity for a particular species. And, you know, the North American model of conservation over time has kind of been funded, created, and found, and based upon hunters buying licenses, using those license dollars to manage wildlife species. And then when the wildlife species, when there's an issue that comes up and the wildlife species is imperiled, it's the hunters that are there to defend that species and make sure that species is properly managed so, you know, future generations can enjoy the same hunting we have. And I think the same thing works with the grizzly bear. If you look at what happened with the wolves in Montana, when I first got on the commission, our wolf discussions would be 6-7 hours here in Helena when we have a commission meeting on them. And that was when we were having a lot of litigation and we couldn't get people on the landscape to hunt the wolf. Now, the wolf populations have continued to grow or at least stay relatively stable over time. But since we've entered and opened a hunting season in Montana, at least at the commission level, the average wolf discussion that we have to have now takes maybe 15 to 20 minutes, whereas it used to take 6 hours and tons of really a lot of heartache, a lot of hard comments. We still have one district that's very, very contentious. That's the hunting district down in Gardner. Grizzly bears are a little different because there's a lot more advocates already. And I've spent a lot of time trying to figure out why grizzly bears are more popular in Montana than wolves were. And I think that has to do with the fact that grizzly bears have always been here. Even though wolves were probably always here, it wasn't until the government brought them back in 1996 or 5 that the wolves really regained a foothold on this landscape. Whereas grizzly bears have grown over time very slowly. It didn't happen all at once. So this slower growth of the population, the slower reboot of the population, allows people to adjust and become more comfortable with it. Wolves happened all at once. So the hunting is another part of that. It seems counterintuitive to say we're going to go hunt a bear or we're going to have a hunting season on bears in an effort to help protect the bears. But what hunting does help build the social tolerance. So if you're interested in expanding where bears can be in Montana, you need to give people, I think, an outlet, an opportunity, a legal opportunity that's managed to harvest a bear. If they can't harvest a bear, what you find is, you know, people shooting a bear and throwing them back in the woods.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Chairman of the Montana Fish and Wildlife Commission, Dan Vermillion. Interesting history, the shift from unregulated market hunting, which extirpated many species from the passenger pigeon to almost all big game, selling the hides and meat, including grizzly bears in California, by the way, which were exterminated by market hunting, and grizzly bears were eaten then. And the development of the North American model along the lines of the Fish and Game Commission, as you said, and hunting and hunters as a source of support for the maintenance of those species that they hunt. You can think of Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, Elk Foundation, et cetera, et cetera. But the demography of the country is changing, and the nature of the department is now called California. It used to be Fish and Game when I was on the commission. It's Fish and Wildlife. Reflecting a change in public perception, On the financial front, I don't know what the situation is in Montana, but many states are experiencing decline in hunting revenue, an increase in support from, quote, conservation or environmental interests. So do you see that trend in the future here?
I do. I think that, you know, Montana has been fortunate over the last few years because we do still have such a strong hunting and fishing culture, and we still have people who may have grown up in California or West Virginia or wherever else, that they moved to Montana because they like to hunt and fish. So we have a tendency to siphon off some of those hunters and fishermen from other states. So our hunting and fishing population, our license revenues have been stable. We're very fortunate in that respect. But I do think that if you look at communities like Bozeman or even Billings or Missoula, you do see a real influx of people that are moving here, not just because they like to hunt and fish. They're moving here because they love fish and wildlife, public lands, quality natural resource, you know, environment. And for them, the idea of a great day out in the woods is where they get to see the wildlife. You know, growing up in Montana where, you know, we'd go, you know, a great day for us was out when we went out in the field, we had an opportunity to shoot a pheasant or shoot a deer. And so that is shifting. I think there's no question that's shifting. And I think it's a natural progression. And I think it's really incumbent upon the hunting community and the fish, wildlife, and parks community to figure out how to incorporate and bring those new constituents and those new advocates for wild fish and wildlife into the conversation so they have an opportunity to participate. But they also have, we need to give them an opportunity to help us fund fish and wildlife management, because as populations grow, you know, human populations grow, the amount of money it takes for an agency to manage fish and wildlife resources to a level that people expect it gets more and more expensive.
The change in demography reinforces my impression, and I get around and talk to quite a few people, that if you put it to a vote, people would not support the hunting of grizzly bears for trophy hunting. That, by that I mean not using the meat. There's a statute in Montana that says you have to use the meat of anything you kill. My understanding is there was an exemption when grizzlies were hunted that you didn't have to do that. My impression is that actually hunting bears is not supported by the people of Montana. The data coming out of British Columbia is 80% oppose hunting of grizzly bears for trophy hunting if you don't eat the meat. Do you think those are accurate figures?
You know, I don't know about, I mean, I think that's one of the hard parts about the Fish and Wildlife Commission is we don't necessarily have a conversation with the majority of people. We talk to a very small slice of Montana, the people that actually are engaged in policymaking or who really are actively engaged in these sort of decisions. But I do think that, you know, hunting's played a really fundamental role in getting fish, you know, wildlife back to where it is today, where we now have great elk herds, great deer populations. Mm-hmm. And our challenge no longer is limiting the take by people of, you know, hunting on, you know, the impact on the mortality on fish and wildlife resources. The bigger question is, how do we go about managing the habitat? How do we about creating mm-hmm. the place for these animals to live? And so that's our bigger issue. I do think you're right, but the majority of the population would not be supportive of just hunting for trophy. However, when you look at hunting and how it plays a role in the successful conservation of the species, I think that decision of people's opinion would change. I also think it's important to just look at how other species have responded to hunting and how that's been helpful to those species. And we're hopeful that with grizzly bears, we'll have the same sort of impact. And it's important to remember that if you are looking at the hunting season in Montana, it is a hunting season that is very, very conservative. And our vote to approve a hunting season in Montana doesn't mean there's going to be a hunting season in Montana in the foreseeable future. It was just part of what was requested to the department by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as part of our overall management approach to bears as part of the delisting process. The other part of that is, you know, the way you look at the GYE, and there's Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming, and we've each been allocated a certain percentage of mortality. And let's say, for example, the allowable mortality to keep the bears at the level that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service wants is 100 bears. This is just strictly
hypothetical.
But Wyoming would get 58% of that mortality in a year. Okay. Montana would get 38% or 34%, and then Idaho would get 8%. Now, of that mortality, if you have a year where there's been a drought and bears have gotten in trouble with livestock, or they've been down too low eating chickens because the berry crop's bad.
And taken out by the government.
That all comes off that mortality quota. So it's very possible that at the end of the year, after you have that allowable mortality that's been taken up for all the other reasons of interactions with human beings, there is not going to be a hunting season because, you know, a good year a big year, you might have a hunting season where there's 4 to 6 animals to be hunted. So it's a very small season. It's not going to be a season all across the state.
American hunters are very proud of the North American hunting model that you've outlined and hunter support for it. I've been a hunter for 50 years and am proud of the contribution to conservation of species that hunters have made. The demography is changing, and even hunters I talk to question trophy hunting for grizzlies if the meat is not used. And several have said they think it will undermine support for hunting in Montana because people will say, well, they're not using the meat. And there's a tolerance level and an understanding. If you kill something and eat it, there's a legitimacy to that, accepted by many people. A majority of Montanans don't hunt. So that argument is allowing hunting for grizzlies, even with this protective structure deducting mortality, will undermine support for hunting and is not good for grizzlies.
I would disagree with the fact that it's not good for grizzlies. I understand that the perception is, and the possibility is, that it will alienate some folks and create a situation where they become non-hunters or anti-hunters because of the trophy harvest of grizzly bears. And as a commissioner, there's been several times where I've had to vote on hunting seasons that it's a species I wouldn't personally want to hunt because I don't like to hunt things that I don't take the meat home myself. Yep. But I really do believe in the culture of hunting, and I don't think it's my role as a commissioner to put my moral position on the harvest of a particular species and how I feel about that harvest and impose that upon others that might actually enjoy the opportunity to hunt that grizzly bear. And if they enjoy the opportunity to harvest that grizzly bear and it's done in a sustainable manner within that structure of allowable mortality to keep the species stable and recovered.
Even if they don't eat the meat.
The way I look at a grizzly bear hunt is much more in parallel to the way you'd look at a wolf hunt, where we don't harvest the meat and it's an opportunity that a lot of folks enjoy. I don't look at it the same way I look at the harvest of an elk for your winter's meat.
Change is difficult in honored traditions. Given the changed demographics, can you envision a day where the commission would say a majority of people in Montana don't want trophy hunting for bears? They want to honor the grizzly bear as our state mammal. We have enough to hunt, but we will not hunt them.
I can envision a day where the political leadership in Montana and the political voices in Montana may reach a different conclusion as to how we hunt or whether we hunt certain species in Montana. But I really do sincerely believe that the hunting of grizzly bears and giving people that opportunity is in the long-term best interest of the bear. And so I can envision that that could occur. I don't think it would be healthy for the bears.
Dan Vermillion, I very much regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground.
Thank you, Brian. I'm a big fan of your show. I appreciate it.
To our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.